We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also happy once again to have on the program Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist. He's in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences here at the U of I. And every once in a while, particularly here in the summertime, when the insects are most active, we ask him if he would come be a resource and answer questions about bug problems around the house. So this could be something in the house, could be something in the home landscape or the garden. So could be something just bothering you because it's crawling around inside, or if it's attacking your ornamental plants, or maybe it's attacking the things that you've planned and would like to put on your table. Any and all of that is certainly fine. You can call in and tell us about the problem. Give us the best description so we know what it is you're talking about. And then Phil will tell you what you can do to get rid of it. I have also, one of the things I always say is he's a love the bugs kind of guy, just like Maid Marienbaum is a love the bugs kind of gal. And often he has said, now, is this something that you can live with? And if so, well, that's great. But if it's something you just cannot live with, well, we'll tell you what to do, how to get rid of it. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Hey, thanks very much for being
Thank
here.
You. Again. Yeah, I better stay on the right side of my department head. I'm now in the Department of Crop Sciences.
Oh, Crop Sciences.
We moved a little over a year, a little under a year ago.
I just can't keep up with you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's musical chairs.
All right, Crop Sciences. Well, in any case, glad to have you here. You know, May was here just the other day, and something that she just mentioned and we actually never talked about on the air was she said that it was really surprising that at this point in the year we are hearing the Dog Day cicada, mm-hmm. the annual one,
right, uh-huh.
which generally you expect to hear later in the summer. And I was
right.
thinking, well, does that say something about what conditions have been like so far, particularly for temperature this summer?
Generally, from what we've been able to see, we're running 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule. The Japanese beetle showed up around the 10th of June when normally or the 7th of June, actually, when they normally will show up around here around the 23rd to the 25th. So, yeah, we're running early. Other things are coming out early. So yeah, that's the reason why she's hearing them. And for something for people to look forward to, next year is the year of a cicada for the southern two-thirds or so of Illinois. So we should have periodical cicadas coming out in late May next year. So something to look forward to, something to plan your excursions around, to be blown away by the music or of a nasty sound, depending on how you look at it.
Well, I remember it now, I'm not sure how many years ago it was, up in the Chicago area. Maybe it was like about three
years. Yeah, something like
years.
That.
I happened to be up visiting family and in DuPage County in one of the collar counties, and it was truly amazing, the sound that all those insects make.
And that one, that particular emergence is known worldwide as the largest periodical mosquito emergence that there is. So
cicada,
yeah. Periodical cicada.
Mosquito. Was that mosquitoes in the brain?
Yeah, I got just, mosquito in my brain.
The numbers of insects were just stunning.
Right.
And they would just you'd just be walking along and these things would just blunder into you because I guess they didn't, you know, no difference between you and a building or a tree or something like that as far as
anything upright is something good to land on and see if you can lay eggs in it, you know.
Yeah. and the noise, and I'm sure that there were a lot of people that were really disturbed by the sound because it was so loud. And if you were in certain places, like I'm sure if you were in the Morton Arboretum, it was sort of around that area that it must have been, the singing must have been truly spectacular.
And what's even worse is we got a mite that showed up that normally attacks gall insects that attacked the cicadas and the cicada eggs and was very numerous in the emergency rooms of the hospitals filled up with people getting bit by mites. Not anything that's going to survive in us or be a long-term problem, but when your whole skin is crawling with mite bites. And so we're kind of a little uneasy to see if that's going to show up in the one that comes up. It'll essentially be from Sangamon County on south, where Springfield is, and that includes our area. But if you people are looking at having some vacation time in June next year. They might want to, if they want to avoid the cicadas, they might want to go a little bit farther north. It doesn't take very far. You get up to Iroquois County, you'll be out of it, or the Bloomington area. But if you really want to see the cicadas in full blossom, go camping at Kankakee at Kickapoo State Park. I go over there every time they come out here just to get good pictures. It's a great place.
All right. Well, again, we're here to answer questions. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. So that's any place you can hear us. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. I guess that just makes me think about that spectacular infestation of soybean aphid that we had last fall.
Right.
Just unbelievable numbers of these bugs. And fortunately for me, I think right at the peak, I left town. So I didn't catch the drifting gnats? I was there just for right for the beginning of it. And before I really knew what it was, and I was just thinking, man, what is the deal with these gnats? And I think actually it got after I left town, it actually got worse. Is that just a one-time thing?
Well, it's not a one-time thing, but it's probably a once every so often thing. Mm-hmm. What happened essentially the soybean aphid overwinters on buckthorn. There are species of buckthorn throughout the state. But those species from about Peoria on north are ones that are appropriate for the soybean aphid to lay its eggs on for the winter. Hatch out in the spring, feed for a generation, and then they migrate to soybeans for about 30 generations during the rest of the summer. So aphid generations are very quick, like 7 days or something, 5 days. And so they normally are not very numerous in this part of the state, but they ended up being more of a problem in our area last year. Probably due to two things. One is that soybean aphids don't reproduce well or survive well at temperatures over about 85 or 87 degrees Fahrenheit. And we had a cool summer, much cooler than normal. So that allowed them to build up in high numbers. The other thing is our cool weather was associated with winds that were coming down, fronts that were coming down, and winds from Wisconsin and those areas. And what will happen is the soybean aphids will be updrafted into the lower parts of the atmosphere, several hundred feet to a couple of 3,000 feet in the air. And when a raindrop is formed, it forms around a nucleus. Usually that's a speck of dust. That's why when it sprinkles a little bit and it dries, your windshield is dusty.
Uh-huh.
It's the dust is, the little each little piece of dust was at the center of a raindrop. Well, they will actually, water will actually condense around an aphid and will literally rain aphids. And so a combination of the fronts bringing those aphids south and the cooler temperatures from those fronts keeping it cool allowed the soybean aphids to be built up. You talk to people in the Chicago metro area and they say, oh, yeah, we've seen that several times. That happens up in northern Illinois, Kendall County, some of those areas. It's an every second or third year event that you'll have these aphids, adult aphids, floating and flying to their overwintering host, buckthorn. Interestingly enough, what happened when they got to the buckthorn this last fall was we hadn't have some rainy spells. Rains increase the amount of fungal diseases. Aphids are susceptible to specific fungal diseases. Short thing is that they got to the buckthorn and most of them apparently died of fungi, didn't lay any eggs hardly at all, and so we do not feel we're set up for this to occur again next year.
All right, very good. Well, let's start off with a caller here. It's someone in Mahomet. We'll see what's on their mind. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a problem that truly is one I don't want to live with. My gas opening, you know, for putting gas in the car behind the little door. It's like these wasps build a nest up on the top of that little compartment. And I got stung last year. I found a nest about a week ago again, but there was nobody on it at the time. And how can I just prevent them from putting their house in my gas cap door?
Well, chances are they're getting in around through that gas cap, the lid that goes over the top of the opening. And you may want to check with your mechanic to see if there's a gasket that's gone bad or deteriorated or not put on right the first time. Since that's the first time I've ever heard that problem, my guess is that is that generally the gas cap would fit tight enough that that's not likely to be normally a situation. So they're going to have to, any wasp has to come and go throughout the day to gather larvae to feed to caterpillars and things like that, to feed to their young in the nest, and then also to get out to find nectar for themselves. So they have to be able to come and go all the time. And generally, they're not going to enter someplace where it's very difficult for them to get in and out of. So my guess is that for some reason, the cover over your gas cap is probably not fitting as tightly as it should. It may be as easily solved as a little piece of weather stripping put around that area, but contact your mechanic. There may be something there that's deteriorated, and it's probably a relatively easy, cheap fix.
Well, I never thought about asking them for a solution for the car.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a gasket.
Yeah, I've never noticed much of one, but usually they fit tight enough. There's a spring that holds the cover on or something. And my guess is that something's not quite right. That's a line, an opening that's big enough, and there's two ways of going about it. You could probably do some weather stripping around there to seal that opening when it's closed. Or a better way to start out with would be to check your mechanic, see what's going on. He may say, oh, yeah, this spring's bent, and he takes a pair of pliers and straightens, and you got it covered.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Well, other insect pest issues, that's what we're doing here this morning with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist. He's in crop sciences.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. He, for a long, long time, has been here on a regular basis, particularly in the summertime, to talk about dealing with insect problems around the home and the garden. So if you've got something in the house, it can be also in the home landscape. Can be something that's bothering your ornamental plants, or maybe you've planted something that you're hoping to eat and you're having a problem there. Just tell us about it. Give us a call, and he will tell you how to deal with the problem. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We have a toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. And you can also send your questions by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. What can you say about this year's crop of Japanese beetles, other than, as you explained earlier, they were early this year?
They're early. They're also spotty. In the Champaign-Urbana area, we really don't have very many of them. We have certainly enough throughout the state to cause injury to plants, particularly they are feeding at this time of year and will be feeding probably into August, maybe into the middle of August. Since they came out early this year, I'm guessing probably about the 1st of August they'll be done. And they will cause damage to your roses, grapes, brambles such as blackberries, raspberries, feeding on the leaves. They feed on the blossoms of the rose as well as the foliage. And then we'll feed on a variety of trees such as crabapple and true apple, weeping cherries and real cherries, and also willows, birches, variety of other types of trees. Lindens they really love. And so we recommend that you can go out and where the plants are small enough, you can reach them. You can take a wide mouth jar, put in some rubbing alcohol or soapy water, and in the late afternoon to evening, if you hold this underneath a Japanese beetle and poke at it, the Japanese beetle will fold its legs and drop right into the container and get killed. You can probably collect a pint to a quart of those in 30 or 45 minutes. And if you keep the damage down on your plants, you will have less damage throughout the season, because Japanese beetles change host every 3 days, and they will be attracted to foliage that's already been damaged, and even more so foliage that's been damaged by Japanese beetles. They seem to be able to tell the difference. And so keeping your plants as good as possible early will cause them to go to your neighbor's plants instead of yours, which is what we're all about in a residential area. You can also spray the trees. Carbaryl Soda 7 insecticide is effective. So is Cyfluthrin, which is sold as Bayer Advanced Multi-Insect Killer. Both of these chemicals will last on the foliage for about 2 weeks. So if the insect's out for 3 weeks, and we've already got through the first two to three weeks, we've got 1 to 2 treatments left that will protect the plants. For the most part, you can still find Japanese beetles after the middle of August. They're usually not numerous enough to be any serious damage.
Yeah. If you say you have some plant in your landscape that you know is particularly attractive to them, is there something that would be more systemic that you can do you couldn't probably do it now, but maybe
right.
earlier in the season as a as an early season protectant that you could do even before the beetles show up.
Yeah, imidacloprid, which is sold as you can buy in garden centers as Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Control, or sometimes it's referred, they are also selling it as systemic tree insect control, will apply as a drench to the soil. You have to pull away the dead organic matter and pull away sod first, but that watered into the ground within 2 feet of a trunk will take about 2 weeks, 2 months rather, to get up through into the tree. So kind of the drop dead time that we were predicting was the end of April. Well, it turned out to be the middle of April to get good control, or just because the material lasts in a tree for a year, just doing it, you can do it now and it will protect the tree for next year, or wait a month or so until the Japanese beetles are pretty well through, and do it. But you have to have leaves on the trees to take the material up into the tree, and it will stay there for about a year. And that's an effective method as well.
Okay. We have a number of callers now. Let's start in with Champagne and line four. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I have a question about earwigs. I've been invaded in my kitchen and my upstairs bathroom where there's a shower. And I'm not quite sure how to keep them out.
Okay. Earwigs, for those people who don't know, are about 5/8 of an inch long, dark brown, flat and slender, with a pair of forceps or pinchers-like things on the back end. The good thing about earwigs is that they have to go outside to reproduce in the soil. So those that come into your house are on a one-way trip to nowhere. They're not going to reproduce. They're not going to survive very, you know, they can survive several weeks in a house, but they're not going to cause a recurring problem. Okay, that's one good thing. So if you can put up with them, they're not something that will come back on you. They get in through cracks and crevices in the foundation, and the long-term answer is reducing those cracks and crevices through caulking. They also like dead organic matter, so mulches along the foundation, right up to the foundation, will increase the amount of earwigs that are likely to find a crack or crevice to get in, because it increases the number that are next to your house. Indoors, you can use an aerosol ant and roach spray along in cracks and crevices, but with the knowledge that they're not going to reproduce, they may be few enough that you can just smash them when you see them and kind of get along with them until they kind of abate. But the earwigs numbers seem to be heavy this year, particularly in central Illinois and even in northern Illinois as well, heavier than normal. They came out early as the new season showed, early season showed with everything else. And so they are kind of a bother, but they're not really dangerous.
Okay, I can live with that. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, very good. Over to someone in Urbana. This is line one. Hello.
Hi, we are accustomed to having, you know, various kinds of tiny ants early in the season, but this year, for the first time, we see carpenter ants, not many of them, but just little scouts here and there, and they could be anywhere in the house, second floor, first floor, basement.
Okay.
There are fewer now than there were earlier, but we're wondering, is that a portent of something nasty happening?
Not necessarily. The carpenter ants are going to be... carpenter ants are at least a quarter of an inch long and black, and as wingless workers, they're the only ants that we have in Illinois that are that large as wingless workers. And so and an occasional ant in the house is probably exactly what you're saying, scouts, and the carpenter ants normally will nest in damp, dead wood. And so their natural habitat is old stumps, dead roots, dead branches. They are exceedingly common outdoors because we like to plant a lot of trees around our houses, and they provide nests for the carpenter ants. They're not really a serious threat to the trees, but they will, in their foraging, come into houses, and as long as you're seeing no more than half a dozen a day, you're probably just looking at insects that are carpenter ants that are coming in from the outside, checking the outside, making sure that you've got cracks and crevices caulked, particularly around eaves is where these guys will come in. They're nocturnal ants, so going out just before dark and watching to see if there's things going in and out where they're walking may help find out how they're getting in. Tree branches that are very close to the roof, either brushing the roof or within 3 feet of a roof, are likely to allow carpenter ants in more than otherwise. So keeping tree branches pruned back is also helpful.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. On to another caller. This is someone in Shabance. Line two. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Mm-hmm. I also have questions about earwigs. Actually, I have four questions. I'd like to know what attracts them to particular plants. Why do they seem to be more prevalent in my concrete planters? How long between applications, and what damage do they do to the plants?
Okay, on plants, they will. Earwigs are nocturnal. They like to hide during the daytime. They like dark areas. They like moist areas. They like areas with high organic matter, and probably your concrete planters provide all of that. They are more of a problem feeding on plants in shade, such as hosta and impatiens and things of this nature, because they like the shady areas, and people like to also put a lot of mulch around the base of those plants, which provides that cover, that dead organic matter, that moisture that they're really looking for. So those are all factors that will increase the number of earwigs. But they, and when they're numerous, they'll look for any crack or crevice to hang out during the daytime. Their damage is heaviest on foliage or petals that are thin, and they will feed on the flower petals as well as the foliage, particularly a problem on daylilies and can be on roses, but more commonly on shade-loving plants. If you use what we would recommend many times to control them on foliage plants is Carbaryl, which is sold as 7, and the 7 insecticide will give you probably about 10 days of control. So on foliage like that, so an application that often will many times provide the type of protection you're looking for. 7 is highly toxic to bees and other pollinating insects, so avoid spraying the blossoms with that material, and even avoid, if you can, spraying flowering plants, because if they're attracted to the flowers, they may start walking around a little bit on the foliage and find it, and if they find it, they start actively carrying it back to their colony and can kill off a colony.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do have 7 powder, and I just put it in, right on top of the soil.
Yeah, well, on the soil will give you some control, but not as much if you can get it up on the stems of the plants or of a foliage that you're trying to protect.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
I wonder why it is that this particular insect, the earwig, many people find it particularly creepy, like more so than some other things. I'm not exactly sure why.
You know, if you think about all the creepy things, now I'm going to philosophize. If you start thinking about all the creepy things that we get excited about, you know, werewolves, vampires, et cetera, they come out at night. You don't see them during the daytime. And then roaches, which come out at night, like to hide in cracks and crevices. Earwigs fill all of those spots. They don't suck our blood, but they will hide in cracks and crevices, come out at night. They're relatively fast moving, which people don't like as well. And then if they've watched the old Twilight Zone episode where one went into somebody's ear and ate out their brain, then they're all bent out of shape about that. They're named earwig probably because they probably saw earwigs going. They like to hide in dark areas in the daytime, so probably they may have crawled into a person's in the ear of somebody sleeping on the ground or something like that. But they're not a threat to us at all. But I think a lot of it is that they're very much looking. They look somewhat like a roach, and they're they can be very numerous where they are numerous. They're attracted to damp areas, and they tend to show up. In places. Some of the calls that I've gotten over the years that seem to be creep people out more than anything else is they come out in the latter part of June. They're hit very during July, and if you've got a child that likes to go out and be in the wading pool or swimming pool or something, they come in and they throw their wet swimsuit down on the floor of the basement, it will be invaded by earwigs. So you pick that up and there's just 15, 20 earwigs just scattered in every direction. You know, that tends to gross people out, you know. And
they're attracted to the moisture.
Yes, they're attracted to moisture.
Yeah, all right. But they don't bite. Those pinchers.
Well, they can. They can really pinch with those. And I have had a couple people who who claimed that it broke their skin when they got it underneath their arm. These were both ladies, I assume, with smooth, thin skin. But I've had them just wail away on my fingers, and I can't even feel it. So it depends. There have been a couple reports over the years of the pinching and breaking the skin, but you got to realize that I've been at this for 30 years, and I've probably fielded 1,500 earwig questions. So that's a pretty small percentage.
All right. Let's talk with another caller here. Someone in Danville, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I've got a porch roof that leaked, and the leak is fixed, but through the ceiling I've got little droppings all the time of sawdust or whatever, and I've seen the ants, and they're little tiny ants, and I've cut a hole in the ceiling, and I'm just wondering, I can't really see them, but I'm wondering what I can do to get rid of them. And are those carpenter ants? They're little tiny ants.
No, carpenter ants are going to be at least a quarter of an inch long, and they will produce coarse sawdust. Essentially, it's a mouthful for each ant. Under a hand lens or magnifying glass, damaged wood from carpenter ants will be kind of quadrate and jagged, somewhat eaten off squarely on the ends, but a little bit jagged. They don't look like regular sawdust. My supposition is that with the moisture in the roof, you probably got an ant nest in that area that has maybe maintained once you got it fixed and the roof is drying out. The nest may go away on its own as it continues to dry up in there. This winter will probably dry it out sufficiently with the moisture we lose through the walls with winter heating. But that may take care of them. Otherwise, you can, if the ants are crawling around in your house and appear to be interested in any type of food, using an ant bait on them will take care of the situation. We recommend hydromethanon, which is sold as combat ant bait. Generally, if they don't go to that bait, which is a protein or grease-type bait, then go for sweet baits such as Grant's ant bait or Taro ant bait, both of which use boric acid to kill the ants. These are both all three of these would be carried back to the colony to kill off a main nest, which is probably your best thing that will happen. My supposition on the debris that you're seeing is that although there are small species of carpenter ants, they don't nest inside buildings. So in Illinois. These are probably just a matter of each ant having 6 feet and just tracking sawdust that's up in the wall from construction through cracks and crevices that's coming down. I doubt that those ants that small are doing any tunneling in the wood.
What was the name of the first bait you said?
Combat ant bait, C-O-M-B-A-T.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. All right, thank you. And on to Savoy for another caller here. Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have 2 questions. One of them was, it's been about a month ago anyway, I was outside working, and I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't tell real well how big they were, but they were all, we have rock around a brick-facing foundation, and this was on one side of the garage, and I noticed these insects just pouring over the rocks down into the up next to the brick facing of the house on the side of the garage, and they had wings. I noticed they had wings. They were black, and they were, I don't know, I tried to judge without my glasses on. I would say somewhere between no more than a quarter of an inch, but maybe less. I tried to make the mark on a piece of paper and put it on the floor to kind of get an idea of, you know, what I would have been looking at without my glasses. So that's my first question. I was very worried about them being carpenter ants.
Okay. Chances are what you were seeing were winged ants. They could have been carpenter ants, although generally, particularly carpenter ants and most other ants will climb upward. They should have been climbing up a wall.
They were just pouring down into.
As well as... Each ant species that we, almost every ant species that occurs in Illinois, and we have 90 of them, will produce winged reproductives at a particular time of year. Same species throughout the area will produce those winged individuals on the same 2 or 3 days. They normally emerge in the pre-dawn hours and will fly away to find the opposite sex mate and try to start a new colony. That's very likely what you were seeing. And they may have many times, particularly in the evening, you will start seeing massing around an area where they're coming out of. It may be an anthill, or there may just be ants in the general vicinity that they're coming out of unnoticeable openings. And so I would suspect that that's probably what you were seeing. And generally for the location, it's probably not carpenter ants. Most of the time, the winged ants are larger than the worker ants, and usually they're about a quarter of an inch long with wings, and there's many, many species that it could have been.
Okay, would a carpenter ant be going down into the foundation?
Having either of these, any of these go down doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, unless they were just milling around, and a few of them may have been coming in and then coming back out. But
I don't know.
But I don't, without any more information, I really can't do much more than that.
Right. What I did was I just got some insect spray and went along that area. That's all I knew to do. So.
Yeah. Well, large numbers of any insect are usually coming out of where they've been, not going into some place.
I know, it was odd.
You know, new colonies or new establishments of insects are normally formed by a single mated female or a pair. So, having large numbers going into an area seems to be, you know, unusual and different. But I have seen cases of where it almost looked like the winged ants came out a little bit early and then went back into their hole and decided to come out a little bit later. So that may be what you were seeing, but I'm grasping at straws.
Okay. Well, I've kept an eye out, and I haven't seen any more activity. So.
Okay.
My next question was, I have a couple of books in my house that have their leather bound, and I've noticed that some of the leather is being stripped off of those books. And I'm assuming it's some kind of a mite or insect. And what is safe to put around those areas where those books are?
Are these is this an area where just the outside edge, a layer of the leather, is eaten away?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
These are likely to be hide beetles of various types. Most of these are typically going to be in the genus Dermestes. Could be carpet beetles. They're closely related insects. Taking the books and putting them into, protecting them in plastic and freezing them for 3 days will probably kill anything that's in there. Wrap them in plastic so you protect the leather from drying out in the freezing process. And then generally these insects are not going to be very numerous if the humidity is kept low, which will help keep that musty smell from your books, which are fungi growing in the books as well. So if you've got to look to see where you're storing them, store them in as dry, low humidity area as is practical for you.
How big would these beetles be? Because I've not seen any kind of an insect.
Well, the larvae are typically going to be going to get anywhere from full grown, quarter to a half an inch long.
No. I've not seen
so, so not likely. You can get socids, which have a name of book lice, in books as well, but they're normally going to be feeding on starchy materials. They're not going to be upgrading the leather, and they don't. They're probably feeding more on little microscopic fungi than anything else in modern books. So
wouldn't I be seeing these beetles though?
You should be, but they will be attracted to lights, and so if you find them at all, you may find eighth-inch to quarter-inch-long beetles dead on your windowsills in the vicinity of where the books are located.
Well, I've heard there are book mites. Is there any kind of a mite that would be getting after that leather?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Well,
I've never heard of a book mite. Like I said, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think
somewhere along the line, someone said something about book mites that will get after the paper in the book.
They're probably talking about the socids, or what are sometimes called book lice. They're actually a true insect, not a mite. And in general, common language, anything that's small is sometimes called a mite by some people.
Would these book lice eat leather?
No, and they're normally not going to feed on the paper as well. Prior to about 1951 or 52, books were bound with wheat paste, and the socids will get in and feed on the wheat paste, causing paper to fall out of a book. In the early 1950s, switched over to hide glue, Elmer's glue type stuff, things made from animal hides and bones. And this is no longer a food source for these insects, although you find these insects in these more recent books, but they're primarily seem to be feeding on some of the molds and mildews that may be growing in more the more humid the situation is, the more fungi that will be there, and so the more of these socids are likely to be there. But finding one when you open up a book is not an uncommon thing whatsoever. And I could probably find socids on the windowsills of every house in the United States. So they're a very common thing, but they're so small people don't notice them. They're probably get 15 or 20 on the head of a pin, still have room to dance.
Okay, so could it be just the book is very old and the leather is maybe just worn and falling?
That would be more likely to my feeling, okay. Particularly if the – now I'm going to tell you just the opposite. My understanding is the leather of these books will tend to dry out and crack under low humidity. So
okay.
It's kind of a catch-22
yeah.
here. But,
I assume if I'm not seeing any kind of an insect and that I have other leather books that don't seem affected at all, but they're not as old, that perhaps it is – just the age of this particular book?
Very likely that's the case, and you may want to go online and look for what they would recommend in order to keep those leathers on those bindings mm-hmm. to be more supple and soft. There are various types of oils that are used, at least in the saddle industry and things of that nature, to keep these leathers supple and to keep from cracking. So I would assume that they would recommend something similar, but I'm not about to step out of line and say, this is what you put on your old, possibly very expensive book, and then find out it was the most worst thing you could have done to it. Check with some people that get into conservation
okay.
of leathers on old books and see what they would recommend. You know, there are things such as neat's foot oil and things of this nature that will tend to turn the leather a little dark. There are probably things that don't, and I'm just not aware of what they are.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your help.
Oh, okay. Very good. Our guest this morning is Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist in crop sciences, and every once in a while, particularly here in the summertime when the insects are most active, we ask him to be on the program and answer questions about insect pests, dealing with them around the home, can be in the home, can be in the home landscape, in ornamental stuff, in stuff you eat. Give us a call if you got a problem, and he'll see if he can help you out. We have a couple of people here ready to go. The number in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. And next, we'll talk with someone in Monticello, Indiana. Line four, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. And I want to apologize if this is a repeat question. I just turned on the radio. So I live in an old farmhouse, and my wife has flower beds clear around the house, and we don't have air conditioning. And so the windows are open a lot, and it's partial basement. But we have gnats, just horrible. I mean, just terrible. And I was wanting to know what we could do to alleviate that.
These are inside your house?
Yes, inside, mostly inside, yeah.
But a lot of them outside as well?
Yes.
Okay. One thing I've noticed a lot of recently with the amount of rainfall we've had this year is we're getting as many fungus gnat swarms as I've seen in a long time. And these are very common outdoors. They will tend to hover around any upright object, and then if there's not much in the way of upright objects, they hover anywhere. But you'll see a large cloud of gnats, and what they actually are male gnats, fungus gnats, that the larvae develop in decaying organic matter, which the more moisture you have, the more of that fungi that they feed on to be available. And the males will form big swarms like this, and then when a female is ready to mate, she flies into the center, and there's one that gets lucky in that whole mass. But the mass of fungus gnats, the males will swarm like this to attract females to them for mating. Indoors, you can have gnats coming out that are related, or at least have similar habits from houseplants that tend to be kept moist, and particularly if you have ferns that need to be kept moist, that's a common situation for that. Other houseplants, generally, if you've got fungus gnats coming out of them, you've either got the plant overpotted where it has too much soil that you can't get the moisture doesn't pull out the moisture out of the soil very efficiently, or you're overwatering the plants. And so reducing your watering will, except for ferns and plants like that that need a lot of moisture, should greatly reduce your fungus gnat problem that you've got inside. I would suspect that's the case, and with your open windows, you may actually be getting some of these other fungus gnats that are developing outside coming in. But it seems like you've got more inside than outside, and my guess is you may have some houseplants that are overwatered.
Okay. That she was using, I think she got it off the Internet, she was using, like, vinegar in a glass to attract them or whatever.
Uh-huh.
It seemed to be working, but...
Well, the ones that will be attracted to that more than anything else are going to be pumice flies, small fruit flies, and these are going to be generally, about probably two could get on a pinhead. They're pretty small, but they're not near as tiny as fungus gnats, and they will be attracted to this. You can actually trap out these flies. There are commercially sold traps for these for the adults. But you can also take a long neck bottle, like a wine bottle, leave a teaspoon or so of wine, or make your own, or put in fruit juice in there, or a little piece of banana or something of this nature. Turn it on its side. The flies will go into the opening, and then to get away, they tend to fly straight up and they hit the glass. When you got a large number of flies in there, you cork the bottle, put it in the freezer for a couple of days, set it back out. Don't bother to clean it out. The dead fly carcasses will attract more flies. And that will help harvest the flies. If it's those kinds of gnats that are a problem, then they're going to be feeding on some sort of decaying vegetable material. And realize, from our standpoint, ripe is decaying. Okay, so they'll get into potatoes, onions, even bread that happens to be open, but as well as things we tend to think about more, such as bananas or tomatoes or something like that that's sitting out that would be attractive to them. And they will develop in that, as well as developing in debris in a garbage disposal or something of that nature. It takes about 10 days to go through a life cycle, so if you get rid of a garbage on a weekly basis, they're not reproducing there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Very good. Well, just keep on going here. We'll next talk with someone in Champaign, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I have a question about something I just caught part of at the very beginning of the program that you said was sending people to the ER visits for some sort of thing they were being bit with. I didn't hear all that, but I'm very curious. I got bit, I think, although I didn't know when it happened, on Father's Day up at probably Middle Fork Preserve or over at Kickapoo, where I was out very, very briefly. And I've gotten something that looked like tickers, and they have big welts, and they itch a lot. But they're lasting much longer, and they're much bigger. Is there something different out there this year?
Not to my knowledge. Generally, chiggers are going to bite on the lower legs. They will also crawl upward till they find a place where clothing constricts their movement on upwards, and then they will many times bite at that location. So they tend to bite at the edges of underwear, things of that nature as well. So generally, how long they last and how much swelling you have associated with them has a lot to do with your own genetics and how much you're becoming sensitized to their bites. And so what may have been chigger bites that weren't near as long-lasting or were smaller earlier in your life may be larger and last longer because you have become more sensitized to the anticoagulants that they inject in. The chiggers will feed for a short time, drop out. Normally by the time they itch and they start to swell, the chigger is long gone. So all the various little home remedies for killing the chiggers in your bites, the chiggers are gone already. So all of them work because all of them are doing nothing and the chigger's gone anyway. But they will drop off, these are larval mites, and the nymph and adult stages are predators on other mites, so you don't have enough mites inside your house for them to stay alive and do well. So this is why you never get chiggers inside a house. You only get them outside a house, and normally they're heaviest in unmowed areas and wetter areas. So that's probably what's going on. I don't know of anything else that comes to my mind that would be causing what you're describing elsewise.
What were you talking about? You said we're sending people to ER.
These were some mites that occurred the last time we had a periodical cicada emergence in northern Illinois, particularly in the Chicago metro area. And there was a mite that showed up for the first time in large numbers feeding on the eggs of the cicadas. And people were getting bit by these mites just drifting around and lying on them and biting. They weren't weren't causing any long-term problems, except that, you know, some people had rashes and itching for a couple, 3 weeks afterwards. And we were making comment that we're looking at a periodical cicada emergence in the southern two-thirds or so of the state this next spring, and kind of watchful to see if these might show up there as well. They have not previously to our knowledge, but we're very being cautious and trying to be forearmed on that.
Okay. And one last question. I heard May Birnbaum talking the other day about these little mites that we have around the sugar ones. I think she said grow up. They have another name, and I think it had something to do with hay or going to fields. What is it that they, what would she have been talking about?
Possibly straw itch mite, which is a predatory mite that will occur associated with hay and straw. These actually feed on other mites, and when they get on people, will bite and cause some rashes and itching as well. Normally, people don't come in contact with it unless they have horses or other livestock where they're handling hay and straw, and these mites can become more numerous during the warm times of the summer because their life cycle is much shorter. They can reproduce more.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to share some information with the previous caller who called in and had the question about her books, because someone at the Lincoln Bindery in Urbana was listening, and they have written this. And they say they think that what the caller was describing was most likely more of a fungus or a dry rot on the leather book cover. Sometimes parts of old leather book covers will become powdery. This is often due to leather drying out over time. They go on to write, just like you wouldn't leave a pair of leather shoes untreated for decades, leather book covers should be treated with something to add moisture back into the leather. Meltonian shoe cream in neutral, that is clear, is a very good product for treating old and dried out leather. It penetrates the surface. The listener says you can find jars of Meltonian in many drugstore chains near where they keep their shoe products. Other things, such as Vaseline, should not be advised for use on old leather books. That's from Tedra at the Lincoln Bookbindery in Urbana. And I thank you very much.
Oh, great. I knew I was over my head. I didn't know how far.
Well, it's always it's very likely that there's somebody listening who really does, no matter what sort of question people can think of, there are people who actually know. So thank you to all the folks at the Lincoln Bindery.
And they're great. They bound a couple of books for me and did an excellent job.
All right, excellent. Well, let us continue, and we will talk next with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I had a comment about the aging leather problem, and I think you're right to say it probably is aging leather. I was a preservation librarian for a number of years and dealt with a lot of that kind of thing in an older library collection.
Okay.
And it's generally not a bug problem at all. It's just a problem of the fact that the leather gets old and breaks down, and generally preservationists in libraries refer to it as red rot because it rubs off on your hands and your clothes and turns everything red.
Oh, I've had that happen when I've been handling old books before. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's not much treatment for it. You can consolidate it with some materials, but they're kind of like Band-Aid approaches that don't really do much good except to kind of keep the mess under control.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The other thing is we've had this spring and summer not big influx, but kind of a steady presence of some larger black ants that seem to like sugar. And so by keeping the kitchen kind of extra clean, we seem to be controlling them. Is that probably normal?
Yeah, you'll get ants particularly coming in the spring of the year. If they are at least a quarter of an inch long, they are likely to be carpenter ants. And if you've seen over a dozen a day, you may have a nest inside the house. They may still be coming in from the outside. But usually people will see a dozen or more per day if they have a nest inside. And that would be in an area of wood that probably got damp somewhere within the last 5 to 7 years. It usually takes 3 or 4 years for the nest to build up enough that the ants start to become noticeable inside the house. So
I haven't gotten down to crawl space, but I suspect there's something down there that's attracted them.
That might be, or it may be that many times people will say, well, yeah, I had a roof leak and I got fixed. Well, if it was sitting there for a while or a water drain pipe leak, sitting there for a while during the summer, then the ants would have got in and got started, may not have been noticeable to the plumber or the roofer. And they will stay there once the wood dries out, but they will get started typically in damp wood. So if you're seeing 10 or 12 or more a day, then that's an indication that you may have a nest inside the house. And sometimes you can put out honey, and they will trail back close, quicker to the nest, get an idea where they are, and then you can just replace the wood, or you can live with it because they will hollow out the wood maybe a foot along a 2x4. Don't do extensive damage. Don't eat wood. And so living with them is an option as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And we'll do one more, and that's Hidalgo, line 3. Hello.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's any way to keep blackbirds out of your sweet corn.
Blackbirds out of sweet corn, you're going to look at, the most effective method are there's various types of bird netting that is sold, but most of us have too much sweet corn to make that worth the cost. But because you really have to cover the entire plant all the way down to the ground. Another method that we have done some research on years ago was that actually, and this was primarily for deer and raccoon protection of ears, is that once the ears have pollinated, that is the silks have turned brown, you can put pieces of nylon stockings, such as women wear, over the ear, and that will protect each individual ear. So a small grower that's maybe only got 60 or 80 ears in their garden, that might be something they can do. On a larger basis, you're generally looking at sound scaring devices, which the birds will eventually get used to, or lights. And so the important thing is to vary what you're doing. Try lights a few days, and then sound, vary the sound. Many of us live in areas where something sounding like a shotgun going off every 15 minutes is not going to be appropriate for your neighborhood. So there's not really good answers for them. But if you're a big-time sweet corn grower, you're probably outside of where you have neighbors that would complain too much. So you might be able to work out something with the neighbors that are close enough to hear it.
And real quick, if you're going to treat for the white grubs that are the Japanese beetles.
Due to all the moisture that we've had, we're not anticipating large numbers of white grubs this year. The Japanese beetles will lay the eggs. Certain areas of Illinois have more than others. But if you do have white grubs show up, we would recommend waiting until maybe early August, cut through the turf, pull it back. You have at least 10 to 12 grubs per square foot. Triclofan, so does Dilox, is effective. Preventative treatments may not be your best bet this time of year, this year, because of all the moisture we've got going into the summer. The white grubs are going to be spread out, and likely you're not going to have heavy enough population to do turf damage.
All right. Phil Nixon, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it.